So I've decided in this documentary to do a social experiment where I will move to one of the poorest towns in the UK, go and live in someone's house who has nothing, no money at all, and see if I can teach them my knowledge and my skills and see if I can make a poor person become rich in 1 week. Let's see what happens. Welcome to the YouTube channel. If you don't know this guy, we did a financial freedom challenge in Blackpool. How many months ago?
It was June last year.
June 2018.
Yeah, no, 19.
Oh yeah, 19.
So we're probably, I'd say like 8-9 months.
So since. We did have a 6-week review.
Yes.
Which was on the original documentary.
And you were on a cruise boat somewhere, like yeah, near Singapore.
Yeah, probably.
And I was in rainy Blackpool. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Now it's 8 months on. Delighted to have you on the channel.
Thanks.
We want to pick your brain. We want to know what's happened since then. You've been very successful in deal sourcing. You've got some really cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
Because before we met and before you did the FF Challenge, you'd never had any tenants.
I didn't have any property experience.
Didn't have any property experience.
Well, I'd read some books. I think like most people who read the Kiyosaki's and all that kind of stuff. I'd educated myself, but not taken any action.
And I think one of the reasons people related to you so much was because you were very much like, you were a very normal guy.
Yeah.
In terms of...
Poor man.
A poor man.
According to the title, yeah.
You approved the title though, so...
Yeah, well, I think it's a really interesting point, the whole title of it, because I think poor man, financially, yeah, but mentally, I think the biggest thing I've taken away from this entire process is understanding myself much more. Mm. Because I really felt like, for you to come into someone's house and you are just a whirlwind when you're there, like whether the cameras are rolling or not, you're just on all the time.
Yeah.
And I think seeing you work to that level made me realize how low and little I was living my life from a professional level. So I've learned so much mentally. Mm.
And you've done so much since.
I've done a huge amount since.
So yeah. Why don't we just recap? I mean, if anyone's watching this who hasn't seen the documentary,
yep.
I would highly recommend checking it out. And it was crazy. I think it's had like 450,000 views, just off 500,000 views, which is insane. You've been bombarded with messages since.
Yeah.
Kind of a bit of a celebrity almost.
Yeah. Good and bad.
Good and bad.
To be totally fair. Going back to the mentality thing, I think a lot of the comments, which kind of hurt my pride and my ego at the time, were like, well, you'll never be successful. Like, look at your poor mindset.
But why would people say that though?
Because... I think,
and you have been successful. So to say,
to a really great extent compared to what had happened the years previous to it.
Yeah,
it was a case of, because I had doubt in myself and my own ability. I think a lot of people looked at it as, well, multi-millionaire property investor comes to your house, lives with you, shows you all the cards, like, you know, here's what you need to do, here's the illusion, here's how it all works. And I'm still there having doubt. I'm still there going, oh, well, I've got doubt about it and I don't know if it works. To be fair, some of those doubts turned out being right because some of the deals that were gained in that documentary never actually turned out or turned out to be problematic.
Yeah.
But the whole process of, I suppose, believing in myself,
yeah,
of actually going, do you know what? It is possible. I am good enough.
Yeah.
You know, surrounded by a lot of people who in working class England, you know, look at it as, you know, you can't attain that, or you're not good enough to attain that, or who do you think you are, kind of thing. A lot of people gave me a lot of hate.
I think when you've got that many views, like 500,000 views almost,
yeah,
you're always going to have some people that are going to say bad stuff,
yeah,
as well as good stuff. But I think that on the whole, I think the documentary inspired a lot of people.
I do as well.
I think it helped a lot of people. I think it definitely, I learned, I said even on the week, I learned loads just by being, because we were starting again, we were doing deals. Blackpool was absolutely brand new to me.
Yeah,
I've actually never liked Blackpool as an investment area.
I know that.
You know, and I told you that, and that's one of the reasons why I accepted to do it with you, because I just thought, guy with no property experience at all. We didn't know each other. We'd met through the eviction.
Yeah,
but hadn't known each other very long, just for a few months. Blackpool, starting with absolutely no money.
Yeah,
this is gonna be a challenge, and a challenge it was. So why don't you talk us through then? So on the week, what people saw was they saw that we got a no money down lease option agreement, which we had to pay for the contracts.
Yep.
Which we paid through deal sourcing.
Correct.
We got two rent-to-rent deals.
Yeah, the serviced accommodation
deals. Yes, in Blackpool. Yeah. And we made £8,000
in sourcing money.
Yep. But most of that money was used to pay for the down payment on the lease option stuff. Because, of course, we... And one of the things really important as well is if you're going to do lease option agreements, to get it drawn up properly.
Yeah.
Because that way, if things don't go well, you need break clauses in there. You need... So we did that. We did it properly. It was going well. 6 weeks after we touched base and you'd filled the property, the lease option agreement property up really well with tenants, your, correct me if I'm wrong by the way, your rent to service accommodation deals fell through, but then you'd replace them and you'd got some more, and that's kind of where we touched off. So I'm all ears. Tell me what happened after that.
The lease option agreement was atrociously bad.
In what sense?
Well, the reason was is a couple of the tenants in the properties were, one was a drug addict, one tried to kill herself. Like, look, I know you say you don't like Blackpool. Blackpool is majorly problematic in certain areas. It's, it's one of the most economically downtrodden places in the UK from my own experience. And a lot of the tenants who were looking for HMOs, especially in the location. Now, I can say, oh yeah, I had some property experience because I'd read a couple of books, but I'd not been out on the streets of Blackpool and seen what were good areas, what was a valuable property, where do people want to live? You kind of have ideas, but we're talking the different sides of the same street can be the difference between Mayfair and Old Kent Road. Do you know what I mean? There's a massive divide in terms of value and desire of where places that people want to live. This HMO wasn't in a good area. It's funny because the same road is split by one main road. One side, which is the same name of the street, is great. The other side, where our HMO was, wasn't great. So we had that issue. So police were involved, you know, paramedics.
Stressful.
Mate, it was... what I realised, when people say, oh, you know, you'll always be poor because of your mindset and stuff, I took on the biggest, most complex deal. I mean, you know, you go and do a crash course and say, go and buy a two up, two down, buy to let house and rent it out for £500 a month and you pay £300 on it and you make £200 a month. This is a four bed HMO lease option agreement with a two.
It's
got everything. It ticks every box. I was trying to run before I could walk. That's not your fault. That's like, I was hungry for the philosophy and idea behind it. Yeah. When it came to actually doing it, it was tough.
Yeah.
It was really hard. So anyway, we flushed all those tenants out, started again. We had more problems with people who'd lost their jobs, who couldn't pay the rent. It was infuriating. And it's only this week that we've managed to fill the whole place. It is now officially...
With good tenants.
Yeah. Well, touch wood. Touch wood.
We'll have another one. We'll have another chat in 6 months.
I'll be like, those tenants were rubbish. Here's the thing.
Who are the tenants now?
The tenants are all nurses. Here's something I learned. This was like a key thing that I learned.
Because this is great. This knowledge, by the way, now, this is experience. I know you had problems with tenants, which is awful, and probably the worst type of tenants. But I think the learning from that, from people watching this now, is potentially awesome.
What is it that you say? Bad tenants worse than a...
I say a bad tenant's worse than no tenant.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. Originally, I thought you were lying. Originally, I would have thought, no chance, I need a tenant in there. It was funny. If you go back through the documentary, there was a point where you and I were sat in the car and you said, how are you feeling about everything? I said, I'm slightly concerned and I'm slightly overwhelmed for the simple reason that I realise I'm taking on £3,000-£5,000 a month outgoing.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, that's never really been a thought process for me, because you're thinking about how much can I earn from it.
Yes.
So because of that, my motivation, as soon as you went, because then I'm like, it's like Mama Duck's, you know, gone off the cliff and I'm like flapping, can I survive, kind of thing, can I fly?
Yeah.
And my first thought was, I've got to get this full, because when the term comes around and I've got to pay a grand for the bills and the rent and all that kind of stuff, I could, because I had a buffer from the deal sourcing, but I couldn't be in a situation where the first month with this new landlord on a lease option on this massive building that I failed on that. So I filled it with the wrong people, you know, and I learned a major lesson from that.
Do you think that, because you filled it with the wrong people, do you think that you were so desperate to fill it fast? 100%. And again, there's no like saying, oh, you did it bad or you did it wrong, because it's just all learning. But do you think that you were so, because you filled that so fast. I said to you after the challenge, I said, look, I think it's probably realistically going to be 4-6 weeks. Yeah. And then you phoned me up.
72 hours.
You phoned me up and you said, dude, I filled the whole thing in 72 hours. And I remember being like, that's almost weirdly fast.
Yeah.
Do you think
it's because I was desperate, in answer to your question, I was desperate to get anybody who would pay money to be in one of those
rooms. So what's the lesson from that?
The lesson
viewers?
From that is, first of all, get tenants. If you're doing this is specifically for HMOs now. If you're getting tenants for HMOs, make sure they all do a similar job. So for example, out of the four rooms, two of them were nurses that were working nights.
Yeah.
The other two were, one was a construction worker, one was a bin man. So one's out first thing in the morning, one's out in the afternoon, the other two are out at night.
Yeah.
But their routine of cooking and stuff, it was all over the place. So I was getting phone calls. I basically became dad at one point. So I'd get a phone call going, oh, someone's left some hair in the sink. You know, someone's left their pans on the side.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're all adults. Come on, sort it out. And those little blips in problems in HMOs, I've found this twice now. Those little blips of, someone's got a problem. Someone's got a little issue with another tenant. That, unchecked, is like a weed in the garden. It just takes over faster than you could possibly imagine. So you have to get, in answer to your question, you have to get the right tenants who live on a similar, even same job. So now these tenants that are going in there this week are all nurses.
Yes.
They all work at the same place. They all understand each other's work cycle. They're just on the same level as opposed to just getting, I had issues with racism. Like, I had all sorts of stuff because of different cultures, different ages, different genders, different everything.
And I think
it was really tough.
That's a really good point as well, because sometimes people say to me, should I have students or professionals in the house? Yep. Or should I have DSS? And it's like, have one, but stick with that. 100%. Know your market.
Absolutely.
Rather than trying to mix and match. So another thing is as well, in terms of management, because when we spoke on the week, I know we had a management company and we spoke to management companies in the area.
Yeah.
What are the pros and cons between self-managing HMO? Because you've obviously looked at both. Mm-hmm. What are the pros and cons between self-managing and getting a management company to deal with it for you, would you say? Because I know you're a deal source. Like when you're selling deals, because you're a very successful deal source, so you've done really well on that side, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But when you're selling deals to people all over the country, do you suggest they manage it themselves? Do they get someone to manage it? Like, how does that work?
That is a loaded question that needs to go down a few avenues. So
take us away.
Okay. So firstly, I think you should only be deal sourcing in areas that you know. I'm probably the biggest proponent for deal sourcing being in one area. So I source exclusively in Blackpool. I don't do anywhere else, and I never will. And people go, well, why? You know, you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. You can't go worldwide when you're just doing Blackpool. And it's like, I don't care, because I know Blackpool really well. It would be immoral of me to sit here with you now and go, I've got a 7-bed HMO in Scunthorpe that's great, and you look at the numbers of it. Like, I know now, having gone through what I've gone through, that looking at numbers on a piece of paper and on a spreadsheet is the opposite end of the spectrum to actually being in there and working in it yourself. So,
if your package deals to sell, only sell deals that are in
your
area,
local area.
You know. I think if you're selling deals, they need to be good deals. They need to be deals that are going to make money.
And it's
fair to say, you know what, I'm only comfortable selling deals in an area that I know really well, because I know the deals are going to.
I think it would be immoral for. I'm not saying you, I'm saying the royal you, for you to sit there and say, and put out an email to your list saying, I've got one in Newcastle, one in John O'Groats, one in Devon, one in London, and one in Manchester, because you don't know that area. I've learned this from doing it for a decent period of time now, is that with regards to the HMO management side of things, I can't, unless it's in my area.
Because I've got properties all over the place. So I've got HMOs in Doncaster, I've got properties in Leeds, I've got properties in Wales, I've got properties all over. So, but I've got good management systems in place.
Sure.
So what's the crack with management? Because you managed the properties yourself, it didn't go great.
Yeah.
What are you doing now? Are you managing yourself still?
No, I've got another property manager. The way I worked is I flipped that question on its head, which was the revenue generated when it was all full on paper, all that revenue generated, the amount that it would make was about £1,800, £1,800.
Yeah.
Which was huge, really.
Per month.
No, but the profit was going to be about £700-800.
Is this
roughly
on your lease option? Or
this is on the lease option agreement. Yeah. Depending on the bills and stuff, it could have potentially got to a grand. Yeah. But with management and stuff, it's about £700-800.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, with the stress that I was going through, would I pay someone all of that profit to take this stress off my hands?
Mm.
And the answer was yes. because it was really getting to me. So I was like, okay, well, it's not worth me doing it then. So the pros and cons of management. Pros of management, obviously, you don't have to give away 10, 15% of.
It's funny because you've been money. In the game 8 months, but you seem like already like a tired landlord.
I hate it. Honestly, dealing with what I love is looking at a property going, this can be turned into this, or when this is done, this is going to look like this. It's right near the coast service accommodation. You know, we can sell this deal on because we don't want it. I love the art of the deal, and I love the financial process, and I love the left-brained logical side of it. Dealing with tenants, like if someone else gets joy out of that, then be my guest. I'll pay you every day of the week.
Let me ask you a question. You've been through a lot of problems with tenants, okay? Are you glad? Because my advice to you initially, I was like, get a management company.
Yeah.
Get some, but let me ask you a question.
I had one, they were terrible.
Okay, was that the one? I won't say because I don't want to make anyone be bad.
Potentially. Let me ask you a question. Was terrible. Yeah.
Are you glad that you did that yourself? I mean, you've got now a HMO management company, which hopefully are good, and you've got tenants, and it's great. But are you glad that you went through that from a learning experience, or going back, would you say, you know what, I'm just going to get a good HMO management, or would you not take on a property at all? Like what's the...
As I was coming up on the train today, I looked in the mirror and saw a big grey hair coming out of the side of my head, and I have no doubt in my mind
that was a landlord hair.
That was like that bloody tenant who, you know, went into arrears or whatever.
But going back, like in terms, what
I'm really glad that I went through the experience of what happens if you don't do it properly. Like if you don't screen your tenants, if you jump in too fast through fear of not having a place full.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm really really glad.
And I know as well that like. I mean, you've been to the crash course. I spend quite a big segment talking about how to reference tenants, how to vet tenants, all that kind of stuff.
I fell asleep.
I don't
specifically remember that.
Do you not? Okay.
The thing is...
But the tenants is way interesting.
Yeah.
Because we do at the crash course, we spend a section on tenants. Maybe we could spend more time on that. I don't know. But we talk about vetting tenants, getting reference, getting previous landlord credit checks. We talk about that. Do you think that there should be more focus spent on that? Or do you think the key is just get a good management company and don't be involved at all? Like what's the... I'm trying to get the learning point.
If you can stack a deal well, if you can look at a deal and it like it's kind of laughable sometimes if someone goes, can you check through this deal? And there is so much wrong with it that the numbers are wildly out.
Yeah.
If the numbers are totally correct and what you say is true and it's in the X area and whatever, tenancy is your only issue. In from my experience, which obviously isn't as long as a lot of people, but tenancy, getting the right tenants in there, like when you used to say, you know, a bad tenant is worse than a good tenant, whatever.
No, a bad tenant's worse than no tenant.
I literally cannot agree more with you on that because it makes or breaks your business. I mean, I've consistently lost money on that lease option agreement up until literally this month.
Yeah,
because wrong tenants. Yeah. Flushed them out. Yeah. Tried a different
tenant. That's bad.
Wrong tenants. Flushed them out. Yeah, it's cost. I'd say probably maybe 7,000-8,000 quid.
Why?
It's cost me.
7,000-8,000. That's a lot. Why did you not? Because I know we obviously we did it properly. We had solicitors draw the contracts up. We had break clauses. I think it was it 3 month. Yeah. Were you tempted after 3 months to just go, you know what, I'm gonna give it up based on the break clause, and I'm gonna.
I was emotionally tied to it. Because it was my first ever deal.
Yeah.
It's like your firstborn, you don't sell it down the river. Yeah. You work hard because believed in it. Because, I mean, I know you were there, but I felt like I found that deal. I found it online. I looked at it.
I looked at it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like the deal, and obviously hindsight's a great thing. And
of course it is.
Was the deal amazing? Was it not? I mean, was it...
On paper... Fantastic deal.
But was it a great deal? I don't know. I mean, you've got the capital appreciation from it, assuming that it goes with value, which do you think it will?
Blackpool is unbelievable, honestly.
In what sense?
It is so diluted and dilated with regards to where the market's at. It literally cannot go lower. And I say that, so, you know, you'll probably come back to this in a year's time and be like...
No one has a crystal ball.
No, that's true. But there's been some land bought in Blackpool. It was actually bought last week for £300 million.
Yeah.
I think it was Universal Studios or one... you know, subsection of that company, and they're spending a huge amount of money in central Blackpool, and a lot of other properties being, you know, started being bought up around there. And it was funny because two, three, 4 years ago, Burnley was the hot place. Everyone's like, buy in Burnley. You can buy a house for 40 grand, 50 grand, 60 grand. Burnley's gone up. You know, you say everywhere follows London. London went up, then Birmingham, then Manchester, then Liverpool, then Burnley eventually went up. Blackpool is still stagnant. Yes. And that's why sourcing there is such a valuable resource.
That's one of the reasons why I really badly wanted, and I was really glad that we did get a lease option. Because anyone that's watching this is thinking, what on earth are you on about? So the deal that we got was a lease option, meaning that we fixed the price now. What did we agree to fix?
140,000.
Jeez, mate. So we've agreed to buy it for 140.
Yeah.
How much did he pay for it?
He paid 115 for it about 12, 13 years ago.
And he did a massive refurb on it.
He did.
How much did he spend?
I don't know how much he spent.
I think it was like 50 grand.
I spent 3.5 on it, finishing it and
everything. Fine. So he bought it for 115, spent loads of money on it. Mm. You've bought it or got the option to buy it for 140 in how many years?
Seven
years. So no one holds a crystal ball, but assuming that goes up in value after 7 years, you've got the capital appreciation. I mean, that's cool. So even though you've paid, you've been down because of bad tenants, I would still... If it was me personally, and everyone has different stress holds and stuff, going back 6 months ago, I would still sign that deal.
I think I would too, but if I had my time again, I'd be way more professional is the word. Yeah. I'd be way more professional with the tenants and who I got in there.
Yeah.
I really would. Because I know as soon as those right tenants are in there, which I think now, having gone through the vetting process, I really feel like they're good people. Yeah. They're all friends. They're all nurses. They're all... You know, they seem conscientious and all that kind of... I just feel a gut feeling that they're the right ones.
That's good.
But as soon as that happens, even if... I mean, there was a point in time where I thought, rather than have a four-bed HMO and a two-bed flat, have it as a four-bed flat and a two-bed flat, and it would still make money. It would still make profit.
No, I think you've been through stress on it. It's been hard. You've got a couple of well-deserved grey landlord hairs.
I do.
But as long as that hasn't broken you and you've got to the point where you're just like, I hate property now. Yeah. As long as you're at a point where you can say, actually, I'm even down on that deal financially. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm glad I did it. I've still got the deal. It's going to go up. I've now got... Are you making money? Are those tenants moved in? Or the
not yet. No, they've signed.
Okay.
They've signed.
And how much rent are they paying?
They are paying £350 each per week.
Yeah.
So the four of them, and the downstairs flat is £500 a month, which has only just recently been...
So as we stand today,
about 1900, 2000.
And how much profit then, once you've paid for the HMO management company, which you need...
I do.
You need...
I do.
Once you've paid the HMO manager and bills, council tax, everything, how much profit are you now expected to be?
Between 700 and 800 quid a month.
Which is good.
But it's hands-off, and that's what I want now, because deal sourcing has become my main thing.
Was it worth the grey hairs?
ask me in two months.
I've been trying to do this interview for months.
Yeah, you have.
To be fair,
you have.
I've been pounding you
to
come down, but you've been saying, I just want to come at the right time. I just want to come. But it sometimes never's the right time, because in property, it's a business. There's always going to be good things going on in the business. There's always going to be bad things. If you're waiting for everything to just be smooth and no problems, if you've got a lot of tenants, a lot of investors, there's always going to be good, there's always going to be bad. The question is, overall, are you making money? Overall, how's
it going? I think the reason why, and I know you probably don't want to hear this, but I think the reason why I put it off for the last couple of months is because half of the people who were commenting on the documentary were fantastic, like Anthony Wilmore, Ashley Rudland, guys like that. Like, they helped me with my health. Like, I assume people know what's going on with the health situation.
Yeah.
The other half were brutal, to the point where I had to get the police involved. So people were posting stuff about my kids, school, my missus, stuff like all my bank, just everything. And I got to a point where they were really coming for me. And I'm
disgusted.
Me too. But I realized at that moment that my association... And I think it's a hypocritical view from their perspective, because, you know, if you look at that in a vacuum and say, a multimillionaire is offering to come to your house for 7 days to teach you how to become financially free and property, you're telling me they wouldn't take it? Of course they would.
Mm.
But I think I'm like a low-hanging fruit and an easy target. And because of that, it was a case of... I was waking up every day, and it affected me psychologically. Like, I've never been depressed or anything like that, but it was... every time I'd open Facebook or every time I'd open my email, it'd be, we know where you are. Kind of, like I say, I had to get the police involved. It was really brutal. And I think because of that, I was like, yeah, I need to step away from this spotlight that suddenly, yeah, I've been thrust into.
Yeah.
And I the thing is, I didn't expect it. It was like, yeah, coming out of the back of it, I thought, I looked at it as a learning experience. People would gain a, yeah, lot of information about what it's like kind of on the ground and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And,
but you know what though? That, no, obviously that's outrageous and, yeah, shocking. You only told me that last week.
Yeah, but that's the like, it's not that I've been avoiding you. It's, yeah, that I've had to calculate in my head,
yeah,
doing this, because I know that when I get home or when this goes live, mm, I'm going to get more people going, oh, you're Samuel's buddy again. Like, I can't win. Either way, whatever happens, I can't win.
So do you
win.
Think
it's
in
tough.
A way, because do you think in a way that the property stress, how's the property stress compared to the having 500,000 views on a viral video stress?
I've had that before. Like, I've had videos that have had 5-6 million views, but they're all football videos, so you kind of expect Liverpool fans to hate Man United fans. And
do you think it's almost like the skeptics though saying like, oh, like almost, I mean, in Britain,
yeah,
there are in America, if you're driving around a Ferrari, people say, way, fantastic. In Britain, yeah, if you're driving a Ferrari, people, yeah, will try and bring you down.
Yeah.
Banker. Do you think that a lot of it, not, and I mean, we could analyze it all day, but, and you say it's serious, you've got the police involved and stuff, it sounds horrible, mm, but do you think some of that online trolling that you had personally, and I get it as well, mm, but do you think that it's because you went from being in Blackpool,
yeah,
you were a nice guy, and now suddenly, and I know we can talk about deal sourcing, you're doing very well, making lots of money, mm, do you think that it might have been like jealousy, or do you think why?
I think it would be immoral to not touch on the obvious, which is you had a lot of heat at the time around you, and I think a lot of people came after me because they wanted to, mm, get to you, and I was caught in the crossfire of that. And obviously you had your PR firms and you had your stuff like kind of looking after you, and I think you're a stronger person than I am mentally. I think you can deal with that better. Yeah. I'm just like a family guy trying to start a new career,
yeah,
and every relationship that I make with a new investor or whatever is cut short and cut down because somebody wants to cut me down to get to you. And I think that was difficult to deal with, because I'm like, just let me be.
It's funny,
you know,
because I mean, I have people on my channel, like I have Winners Wednesdays,
yeah,
every single week I have a Winners Wednesday on my channel. I have guests on the show,
yeah,
but no one's ever gone after anyone like they went, mm, after you.
I think because it's bizarre. There's one thing, somebody sitting here and going, oh, you know, I'm buying buy-to-lets and my portfolio is now £10 million or whatever.
Mm.
With me, you came into my house. Not you, I mean, the audience came into my house. They experienced, yeah, my children. They were sat on the couch with us. You know what I,
yeah,
mean? Like, I think there's more of an emotional connection with it. I think, you know, like you say, we could analyse this all day. All I'm saying is it was a really tough time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I wanted to get all my ducks in a row. I wanted to,
yes,
understand, because it was like being reborn this.
Mm.
Because I know I've wanted to get into property, but my thought process was always, oh, you need to have lots of money and you need to have deposits and stuff. And,
yeah,
you came and proved that you can do it. It is possible. And,
yeah,
you walked me through that. And I'll be forever grateful to you for that. All this collateral that came around it was somewhat damaging for a period of time.
Yeah.
But I got to a stage where I was like, well, like, screw you. If you want to sit at a keyboard and just throw shade at everyone, then fine, whatever.
Yeah,
but like, I'm building my business, and we've gone from strength to strength and, you know, done incredible,
yeah,
things in a short period of time.
I mean, respect, you know, fair play to you. You had a lot of, you had a lot of bad tenants being trolled,
yeah,
and stuff. I had no idea. I don't think you definitely didn't tell me about the extent of the hate and stuff.
Mm.
Which is just ludicrous.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely next time, I spoke to the to my office and HR team and stuff, and we've said, if ever we do a viral video,
yeah,
we need some kind of support emotionally.
Without doubt.
For if someone's going to be getting, because my YouTube channel started out with just me vlogging my, mm, property journey. Now I'm getting over 1 million views a month on the channel.
Yeah.
It's quite a big YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But the thing is, it's not like we know Simon Wilson mutually. He's,
mm,
you know, a YouTube vlogger, very successful from Blackpool, actually. Lived in Blackpool for a while. He's not like selling a product. It's just him vlogging.
Yeah.
Here's my journey. Here's what I'm doing.
He's not saying about how rich he is.
Well, exactly. Well, you're helping people to, yeah, financially to a great extent.
Yeah.
And also charging, I think is fair to say, like a significant amount of money, like, you know, the money that you charge as a business. To be fair, a lot of people who've gone through it have had great returns from it. It's a significant amount of money. I think as soon as, I'm not saying you, I'm saying the royal you, as soon as you start broadcasting that and charging and people are making these huge amounts of money, it's really easy to become a target. And at that, and at that point, when we did the thing, emotionally, spiritually, financially, in every level, I wasn't in a good place because of whatever, my illness that I had. And suddenly all of these, there's a war going on and I get and I suddenly get caught in the middle. So the support really for anyone, for whether they're in the academy, come to a crash course, like you're breaking down a lot of barriers with what you do, which is phenomenal. Like it is a raw journey of that I don't think a lot of people would be prepared to take, to stand there and try and help make people's lives better by breaking down common mental barriers that a lot of people have, a huge amount of people have, and putting such a massive spotlight on me, really, in this in this
which
scenario,
you wanted,
which I did want, because
but you didn't know, so you didn't know what, exactly how that was going to pan out.
No, I didn't expect the fallout from it.
Let me ask you something else as well.
Yeah,
obviously you've had stress from tenants and from and from almost 500,000 views on a YouTube video, and what happens with that. What's been the flip side? Because I know your deal sourcing business has been very successful. How much of that do you think, be honest with me, is down to the good exposure that you've had?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All of the positive
from
deal sourcing has come from the exposure from that video.
Right.
So yeah, you know, you take
rough the... Rough with the smooth. It should never be that rough. And geez, if I'd have known, I'd have been like frigging phoning you up, saying, come around my house. And I know you have come around my house after the video. We've had dinner together.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I think the exposure that you've had, because I think branding, and that's something you understand.
Yeah.
You know, branding... the exposure that you had off the video, I'm glad to know, at least it makes me feel better because of some of the hate that you had, knowing that your deal sourcing business, you know, has been massively helped. It's been a big part of the positive exposure that you've had from coming on the YouTube channel.
There's no doubt with regards to the deal sourcing that people dealing with me for a certain interim period after that documentary went out associated dealing with me from a sourcing perspective with dealing with you. So it is incredibly positive, because there's all, like with sourcing, it's all about trust. It's almost not about, can we get these extra 1% out of the deal of the yields or the ROI? It's the trust. You know, I've got clients now who have remortgaged their house and released equity that they've paid off for 30, 40 years.
And you've become good at deal sourcing because you know Blackpool well.
Yeah.
You've sticking to Blackpool. And I'm so glad that the people that you're selling deals to, because I know that a lot of them are my people, they know about you from the video on my channel, but I'm glad you're looking after them. You're selling deals well to them. You're making pretty good money as a deal sourcer.
I've done really well. We've done just over £2.6 million of property sales. That's not revenue to our company. That's how much property we've sold since June last year,
which is when we went together.
Which is
and you, before that, had you ever sold a deal to anybody?
Never.
Which is awesome.
It's funny because one of these hater crew put a thing up saying, oh, he's got no property experience. And they found a post that I'd made from like 2017 or something saying, oh, you know, he's sold deals before. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, I think, right, I'd rang up an estate agent and gone, hiya, there's a house. And it, do you know what I mean? Like really kind of sheepishly.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And I've looked at the numbers on it, and I am like, I am so far out with regards to how much rent it could get, what the purchase price would be.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, honestly, the sourcing has been, it's been life changing. I think I didn't anticipate being a deal sourcer. What I loved about you being when you came to Blackpool was those old habits were kicking in of, you can't do this. Mm. You're not good enough to do this. And that was rampant. I still have little bits of it now and then, but that was absolutely rampant. And the fact that you said, we need £3,000-£4,000 to do these deals. And I was like, I don't have £3,000-£4,000. You're like, don't worry, we'll get it. Yeah. Like we'll do it. And the fact that you unlocked that in my mind, that was potential, was just endless to me. And I've built a good career off the back of that, and we've done phenomenally well.
And you're even like, you've set up an online course. Because you got so many questions from people saying, teach me, teach me, teach
yeah,
me.
I did, yeah.
And you know what? That's really interesting as well.
Link in the description, by the way.
Yeah, well, I will put a link in the description because it's really interesting because people, you know, people will say to me, you know, and I know you messaged me before you did that and stuff. People say to me, oh, is it bad that Glenn's trying to, you know, teach people effectively or show people about deal sourcing? Because I teach people and I do YouTube videos. But I've always said to you, in terms of you should continue documenting your journey, show people, because my philosophy is like, I just want to spread this message. You know, I want to spread the message of financial freedom, of you don't have to work 40 hours a week for 40 years to retire on 40% of what you couldn't afford to live on in the first place. There is another way. Is that going to come with hardships? Of course. But so does working until you're 67. So, you know, if you want to be a property entrepreneur and you've got no money, starting from scratch, is it going to be easy? No, it's simple. It's easy to do, but very easy not to do. And it's going to come with hardships.
Yeah.
But like for me, I just want to spread that message out. And that's why anything that you've done like that, I will be leaving a link in the description because I want as many people as possible to get the message. And if that's coming from me, if it's coming from you, if it's coming from some of my other students, you know, then I'm happy days.
I think what it's doing is it's filling a gap because rather than going to one of your events, which are amazing because it's like 3 days, everyone's together in a room.
I don't think you can beat live events.
Fair enough. But, you know, you've got to drive down there and you've got to get the hotel and you're there for 3 days and take 3 days off work. The reason that I created the Deal Sourcing Secrets is because I got the same question, same five or six questions every single day for months.
So and
I'm still getting it today. And in the end, what I was doing originally was going, oh, hi, John. You know, thanks for your message. Oh, I've noticed you've got two kids in your profile picture. How are they? What are their names? Yeah. I'd go through this whole process. In answer to your question about compliance, here's what you do and da-da-da-da. And I was just doing the same thing. It wasn't a good use of my time. Yeah. So in the end, I just thought, I sat there for about 3 or 4 weeks and just said, this is everything I know based on what you taught me, what I'd learned after the documentary. Yeah. And ultimately, everything that's gone on since then, the 2.6 million that we've sold.
Can I ask a question? How much profit have you made? And not, you don't have to give me this exact specific, but from deal sourcing after we met in June or from when we first met?
Deal sourcing total, I couldn't tell you exactly. It's way over 50 grand. It might be 60.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And if I remember when we met, you know, because I said to you, oh, let's try and make 6 grand this week. And you were just like, I can't even comprehend that kind of money.
Yeah.
I can't even. So the fact that now.
And I did it in 15 minutes.
Yeah. You did?
8,000 in 15 minutes it was.
Yeah. At the event.
One thing that I have, and let's be totally open and transparent about this, one privilege that I had about doing this together is that when I sold those deals, I wasn't legally compliant to do so.
Yes.
Because I didn't know what compliance was at that point. And I passed those deals through some academy members that you know.
Anthony.
And
Alistair.
Alistair helped me out as well. Alistair, honestly, has been a diamond to me. I bought him a little glass saying, like, with a Southern Comfort, which he likes. And I was just like, thank you so much.
You did have support. Because the thing is, everybody was rooting for you.
Yeah.
And even that event that we had, that networking event, I put that networking event on knowing, you're going to come, you're going to sell. And I know, was it Alistair, Anthony? They sold deals to their investors.
Yeah.
They didn't even charge you a fee.
No, they didn't.
They gave you the full fee. But you didn't need that forever because it was only a matter of time once the video went viral.
Yeah.
And now you're an independent, compliant, experienced deal sourcer.
Can I tell you a little story?
Yeah.
There's a great building in Blackpool on Whitegate Drive, which is one of the main arteries going into Blackpool. And it used to be a Morrison's local back in the day. Anyone who knows Blackpool will know this building. It's 4,000 square foot commercial unit, great location. And in Blackpool, there's not many, let's just say most of the pubs are all old men, flat cap, whippet at the bar, you know, pint of Boddingtons. You don't get much for the kind of younger female or like the younger couple wanting to go out and have a good meal. So the good thing with deal sourcing, I never started out wanting to be a deal sourcer, but I was viewing loads of property. You know when you say, you know, go and have your big day where you do like 10, 12, whatever in a day. I was doing that every day. I couldn't do them all, so I was passing them on. So I ended up at this property and I thought, I'm not going to buy a commercial unit. You know, I can't turn it into HMO or anything like that. And that little voice in my head that you talked about and Grant Cardone talked about when we met him was like, you know, you should do something with this.
Yeah.
Like you get a feeling, don't you? I think you get in tune with it. And I thought, right, okay. And I was talking to the vendor, and she said, this will be a great restaurant. It'd be a great bar and restaurant. I was like, actually, yeah, that little voice, you can't do this. You couldn't open a bar or restaurant. So I'm like, okay. So I did all my numbers, worked it all out, worked out how the building was going to work, spoke to the council. I like put a lot of legwork in. And purely through my deal sourcing list, up to this point, I've raised over £200,000 in private funding just from getting in touch with people and selling the idea of this is what we can do. This is, you know, this is how great it can be. We're going to do cocktails and pizzas and all that kind of stuff. The reason that I say that isn't to like, you know, blow my own trumpet, but is to illustrate the fact that when you're confident about property, which you get through education, and you have a list of people who believe in you, you keep regular contact with them, they trust you, and they know that you've got their best interest at heart, then they'll follow you.
Yeah, that's so
good. I'm trying to give people a piece of, you know, anything that I'm doing.
Dude, you are a big thinker, and you are, I saw the print, you sent me the video, I think, was that the video you sent me with the proposal for the restaurant?
That was the one. So I created a video
and
presentation.
I was impressed. I was like, and I told you at the time, I was like, dude, that's, so, I mean, incredible. And you've also, as well, because you've had lots of many crazy things going on, you've moved house.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying, your new house is a lease option agreement house? Come on, dude, spill the beans.
Right, my strategy.
Yes.
As a property investor, not as a deal sourcer or a serviced accommodation provider or anything, I just try and see as many houses as possible. And I think you blinker yourself if you go into a property thinking, I just want this to be a HMO. I only do HMOs. I do nothing else but HMOs. You cut yourself off. So this commercial building is an example of that, where you go in and go, this could be something. And this house that I saw looks fantastic. Great area. I know that now because I'm experienced in that area. Great area, close to schools, really close to the hospital, which is like one of the main areas in Blackpool. Great location. So I went round, had a look at it, and it was really beautiful. But it was old, needed a lot of work, hadn't been loved in a long time, needed care. It needed a family. It needed life in these walls. So I thought, okay, I could sell this. And then I thought, actually, because we were renting at the time, and we were renting for £1,250 a month.
And if I remember right, that was like the majority of your income at the time.
A lot, because
a lot of people said, oh, you're living in a pretty good house. But what they didn't realize is, that was most of your income.
To be fair, that's the same people who were going, he's not poor, he's wearing a shirt. he's got a YouTube plaque.
Kind of depends how you define poor.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
So this house, absolutely beautiful. And I thought, I could sell this. And then I thought, actually, we're renting at £1,250 a month. So by various means, I got in touch with the vendor. And just started texting him. And I was like, look, well, I love the house. It was £650 a month. And it's really beautiful and needs a bit of work to it. You know, what's your situation? And it turns out that he's like a data specialist for the government, and he works in Saudi Arabia. So he does like the infrastructure for data systems, basically top secret and all that. He said, so I'm never in the UK. He said, it just stays empty and my son comes in like once a week or whatever. He says, but, you know, doing my head in, and I'm mortgaged up to the hilt with it. So I looked in the area and everything's kind of around 210, 220, maybe a push 230. And he's got it on at 175. So I'm thinking, why so cheap? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And he's like, I just want to get rid of it. Like I'm mortgaged up to the eyeballs with it. No one's living there. I don't want to pay the rent on it. I just want a way out. So obviously through the training and hanging out with you, I was like, well, you know, how about we do this?
Yeah.
You know, how about, you know, and I just reeled the script off, the same as in the documentary, the same as you do at the crash course. You know, I would make you a cash offer. And I think I offered him like 120 or something on a 175 house, knowing he'd say no.
Yes.
And then it was a case of, okay, how about we do this? We'll rent it off you every month for 650 a month. For the next 7 years, we have the option to buy it for 175,000. And he's like, perfect. Like, I wish I'd have been offered this a long time ago. So from that point, I'm looking at it. It's funny, in a rented accommodation that we've been in for a while, we've brought our family up in our old house, and it just so many amazing memories. My missus was getting to a point where she couldn't change any wallpaper or couldn't change any floors or anything. It was, you know, as you can't do in rented accommodation. And I think she was getting a bit stir crazy and wanted a project to call hers.
I remember saying this to me as well.
Yeah. So she wanted an artistic project. I was looking at it purely property investor head. I could sell this and make 2,000-3,000 quid as a deal, because it worked rental wise. I say it worked. You needed to do a little bit to it, turn it into two flats, etc. But it worked as a deal, and I was coming at it from, okay, so 175,000, we'll spend 20-30. It's in fact, it was worth £205,000 in 2013.
Okay.
So it's already 30 grand lower than it was in 2013. Sorry.
Yeah. So when did you get the option to buy it?
I've got 7 years. So
7 years.
So 2027.
And how much have you got the option to buy it for? Sorry.
175.
That's insane.
Everything else in the area is 210, 220.
So probably, I'm not being funny, but if you did nothing else, you've got your little bit of income and stuff.
Yeah.
Let's say you stop deal sourcing.
Yeah.
Probably in 7 years, you'd be quite a wealthy man from those two lease options.
Yeah. We're like knocking through the kitchen into the diner and opening the back. Basically, we're modernizing a house that
did
is...
Did you get a solicitor to draw it up?
Yeah.
Good.
Of course.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Get solicitors for anything. Anything yes. property, I would say to anyone.
You know what? For sure. If you're getting lease option agreements, because sometimes deals can turn bad. That's just part of it. Your deal almost turned bad and you managed to flip it around by getting a good management company on, but not having a solicitor, not having break clauses, you know, it's really important.
Well, the way I philosophize about deal sourcing is that for every deal I sell, that's my solicitor's fees for a lease option agreement.
Yes.
So here's the rundown, here's the league table, right? So I'm seeing as many houses as humanly possible, and I'm in a situation now where agents, rather than go, let's go to a house and take the photos and, you know, put the ad online and the days it takes to get on Rightmove, then go on a viewing and someone puts an offer and it falls through because of a chain. Rather than all that, they just go, Glenn, we've got a property, you know, the numbers work, 10% yield, 20 whatever percent ROI. Do you want to come and see it? Yeah, where is it? Oh, it's here. Cool, that sounds good. Let's go.
Yeah.
Meet them there. I'll sell that today. I'll sell that this afternoon or tonight or tomorrow or whatever.
It's a great skill.
It's great because they're coming to me now going, why would we spend weeks getting a property available when we can go to this guy and sell it potentially very quickly?
Yeah. Well, that's the win-win of deal sourcing. Some people have got money and they just want to dump it in. Other people have got... If you're viewing properties anyway to buy yourself, which you are, even if it's strategic lease option agreements, rent to rents, but if you're out looking at houses, talking to agents... Yeah. To flush the deals down the drain,
exactly.
You can't buy yourself when you could pass them on to someone that really wants it. It's happily going
to
pay you.
But that's not. But that to me, the deal sourcing is kind of second or third in the league table because I will always and consistently, and I've even trained a state agent. Like I've gone into a state agent and gone, if I talk about a lease option, this is what it is.
Mm.
So what I want to do is when I want to take it over a term of X amount of time with the options, and I've trained them so that when they show me a deal, they know they're going to sell it through one of two ways. If I can get it on a lease option, I'll pay the 2-3 grand, get it on a lease option.
Yeah.
Because, all right, I'm not technically building a portfolio. The argument is from the uneducated, I suppose, is, well, you don't own anything. And then you're like, well, Amazon don't own anything. Airbnb don't own anything.
Yeah.
Uber don't own anything.
Control everything, own nothing, Warren Buffett says.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So what my first thing is, I'll go in, I'll try get a lease option. If I can get a lease option on it, then I will rent that out, knowing that I'll realize
I remember having a conversation with you on the phone just before the challenge.
Yeah.
And I remember you going, well, is a lease option even possible in Blackpool? And you're saying the wrong way, like it's. But now seeing we got the one from the week. You've now used that to go and get another one, which you're actually living in, which is awesome. And I think as well, some of the problems that you had with tenants, which taught you, because really interesting when you're making a decision on a deal. I remember Grant Cardone saying this to you when I brought you down to meet Grant.
Yeah,
and he said, look at the worst case scenario. If the worst case scenario is going to cripple you, then don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
If the worst case scenario is going to be, that would be a bit annoying, but I'm going to be okay. But the best case, then you can do it.
Well, actually, what he said at the end was, you'll be pissed off you didn't buy 10 of them.
Yes, he did say that. So I feel like, you know, the worst case with your lease option agreement that kind of did go bad to some extent was, it's terrible, I've got a 3-month break clause, I can walk away and I've lost some money. You know what I mean? So I think it's a case of...
I've got other ones going through now as well. Like
But do you feel though that all that you've learned from the good, from the bad, if you hadn't done that, like we could have gone out for a week and got a couple of deals, they could have all gone swimmingly well, you could have made £2 grand a month forever and live happy ever after. That is not what happened.
Yeah.
But what has happened, do you feel like in a way it's given you the knowledge and the foundation and the grounding to now be doing these big deals and the hotels?
That to me, that last 6 months was 9 months really, But now let's say 6 months, because I kind of come out the backside of it a little bit. It was a bit like a birth squeeze, but it was done on such a grand level with so many people watching.
Yeah.
I suppose it's like...
It's scary.
Yeah, it is. And there's a lot of people watching you and a lot of people judging you. Whether people say, oh, I'm not a judgmental person. You absolutely are. You know, a lot of these people are.
You've got to just not care.
But I had to go through that. Had you have come to my house and it not be filmed, and we did what we did and I carried on, I potentially might be further along, but I would have nowhere near this thickness of skin that I have now. Honestly, because now, here's the thing.
Yeah, I get that.
I know when I'm going into a property now, I'm not coming from a place of scarcity, which is, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't own any property. I've got no money. I'm scared. Yeah. That's where I was coming from back then. Now I'm coming from a place of, even if you took the money away and took the whatever away, I can walk into a property, speak with a vendor, and they'll say, oh, you know, well, we're looking to move, or we're looking to do this, or we've had it for a while, or someone's died, whatever. I can look at that process and go, not how best can I close them? There's a case of, what do they need? Yeah. Like, and I've become way more compassionate. Like when you were there, my back was up because I was when the documentary came out, my back was up because I had to protect myself. And
I understand.
And I've learned now to be compassionate, to be compassionate with agents. Yeah. I know everyone's like, agents are the enemy. Agents are your best mates and treat them well. Yeah. Treat them well, treat vendors well, treat your staff well, treat everyone well. Yeah. And somehow through the magic of the universe, it seems to come back and you just seem to get more of it.
So do you feel that you've become a better person?
Without question.
That's great.
Well, and that's thanks to you, man.
Oh, man,
I appreciate that.
You've always been a good person. And that's one of the reasons why I was happy. And we've known that you're a good person, but we got on like a house on fire in the week.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, because I want to focus on the negative a little bit more. Not that there's not been enough. But talk to me about the auction property. The infamous story. I'm sorry to bring it up. You did say I was allowed
to
bring this up.
No, I'm happy to talk about it.
But listen, like, if I remember actually, okay, you came to some training and I spent about 40 minutes talking about auction properties.
Yeah.
And that if you're going to do an auction property, always get a survey, never buy blind. And I think you might have been video editing, probably for me.
That day was the day that the eviction came out.
Yep, yep.
And obviously I directed it, wrote it and all that. I wasn't in the room.
So you weren't quite in the room.
Me not being in that room cost me basically £10,000. Cost me £9,334.
Right, so missing a 40-minute part of the training.
Yep.
So obviously available for the training. But just tell me.
I take check. And I'm
but just tell me, because like, it's a very powerful story and it's always good. If you're going to hit the rocks, be a lighthouse.
Yeah, man.
I really believe that. And you phone me up and you're like, dude, I've just put an offer on a property auction. I was like, oh, that means you've got to complete, right? Yeah. And I was like, huh. And I think Alistair was like, I'll help you with it.
Yeah.
And different things. But it turned out going disastrously
wrong.
We were going to
JV on that.
Tell me everything. Tell me what happened.
So this property came online.
Yeah.
Through Northwest Auction House, I think they were called.
Yeah.
And I thought I was doing quite well at the time. You know, I'd made some money through sourcing and I was like, I felt like I was Mr. Moneybags.
Yeah.
I had about 12 grand in the bank and I thought.
Weird feeling at the time.
It was, yeah, it was weird. It was like Christmas Day every single moment of my life. It was unbelievable.
Because of the deal sourcing that you'd done.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, it was 8 grand from the deals that we'd done and another two.
So you're like, 12 grand, I'm rich.
Yeah.
Poor man turns rich.
That's it. And yeah, I'm like, okay. No one can touch me. I just had a force field around me. So I went to Bolton Wanderers Stadium, which is about 45 minutes from where I live. And I turned up and there was just hundreds of people there, and I walked in and it said, please do not film anything, homes under the hammer are there. So I'm like, great. So see, you know, Martin whatever his face is and all of those like hanging around. So I'm going confident, I know which one I want. There's a property right close to Stanley Park in Blackpool. Now Stanley Park, massive plot of land, really close to the hospital, really close to the zoo. It's the place to be. It's the prime real estate. It's the Park Lane and Mayfair of Blackpool.
Yes.
And off one of the side streets, literally to the point where I'd say 50 feet, you're literally standing on the park. Everything in an area, £250,000, £180,000, £200,000. This house, 52 grand.
Yeah.
So I thought it's a third, if not a quarter of the
thought
prize.
It's got Glenn Kirkham written on it.
Honestly, it's the dream scenario. Everyone else in the world is an idiot because they didn't see this. I must have like the grace of God on my side.
This was just after, maybe the week after I left your house.
Yep.
Okay. I wasn't with you at the time.
No, this was all my own doing. So, it was 40,000. It was £40,000.
Okay, yeah, even better, right?
So I get my paddle.
Yeah.
And I'm like really, I'm like half nervous because I've never done it before, but I'm also like half like cock of the walk because I've just sold some deals.
You got loads of money in the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I must have been. I don't think I'm a very arrogant person, but I, like in hindsight, I probably. Looking at myself in a mirror was quite arrogant at that point because I was like, nothing can touch me.
Yeah.
So anyway, we start bidding and it goes 46, 47, 48. And there's two of us left, 49. I go 50. He goes 51. I go 52,000. Sold 52,000. And I'm like this was the third lot of like 150 lot auction. So yeah. I'm like, wait, come on, baby.
Yeah.
So I get ushered off to this side room and I put down... I think it was like 6,000.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more.
I think it was maybe 9, but anyway, go on.
The total it cost me was £9,334. That's including surveys.
That scarred you for life. You remember the exact to the pound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it might have been more. That was the total.
I think it was.
But I think the deposit down was maybe it was 7, 8.
Okay.
Anyway, whatever it was a lot of, it was most of my money at the time. And I walked out of there feeling like an absolute god. And there's a friend of mine, Richard Campbell, who was the guy who showed us the serviced accommodation, a lot of developments and stuff. And I went, mate, I said, I bought my first house. I'm an owner. I'm a homeowner. I can't believe it. And he goes, where is it? And I told him, and he goes, oh, it's not that 1 second up from the park, is it? I
said, not what you want to hear.
Yeah, he said, oh, God, mate. He said, you're an idiot. He said, you should have asked me before you went. I was like, why? He said, just go and drive and have a look at it. At this point, I'd not even seen it. Never. I'd look through the legal pack, but nothing else. Like, not even driven. But
what people are going to say in the comments, so we might as well answer them now, is...
I'm an idiot.
What were you thinking? Like, what?
Oh, mate, I like, hold my hands up and just accept everything that is thrown at me about this. Like, I do. I am a idiot for it.
But you know what, though? I mean, do you think it might have been... a combination, and I don't mean to read too much into it, between you've got all this money in the account and you're like, because you suddenly feel rich.
Yeah.
Do you think it might have been, and I don't want to over like spiritualize this or anything,
right.
But I believe that we almost have a money blueprint.
Yeah.
And we're almost like in the same way that you can have the thermostat set for 21.
Yeah.
I believe that I have a millionaire's blueprint.
Yeah.
You could strip me from everything, I'd get it back fast. Do you feel that maybe you had a bit of a lower thermostat setting and you just got the money and you just had to sabotage it somewhere?
I've never thought about it that way, but you're probably right, actually. Maybe. I've never thought about it that way. So I went to see it, and honestly, you could put a marble at the front door and it would roll all the way down to the back door. Like, the subsidence on it was a joke.
Like a boat.
Yeah, worse than a boat.
Worse than a boat.
So about 10, 12 years ago, there's some marshland, literally my back garden, and one of the big house builders, the new build developers, had built four houses on there. Every single one of them sank to the point where you couldn't get in the front door. They had to, there was a massive court case, prison time. Like, it was really
terrible.
Brutal. And that was my back garden. So this house, the subsidence on it was terrible. So I paid for a survey, £500 structural survey, and they said in our 80 years doing structural surveys, we've never seen a house with such such great subsidence. They said it's remarkable, that's the word they used, it's remarkable that this house is still standing. They said it's due to the cellular structure of they basically said it's relying on next door to stay up, and we don't think this house will be here. What did they say? There's something like, it would be a miracle if it stayed standing for 5 years.
So you pulled out, lost your deposit.
So I pulled out, lost my deposit. And do you know what? I think, although the tenants and stuff in the HMOs were problems, looking back, I think that was, that loss of that much money was the punch in the gut that I was like, do you know
what? You probably deserved that punch. Bang.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Let me ask you something. Because that was a kind of a schoolboy era. right? They're like an over-enthusiastic
yeah.
person that just skipped the class of yeah. schoolboy era. You learn from it, and I'm sure anyone watching this hopefully will not go and buy an auction property without viewing it, without a survey after this. You are a good communicator. You are naturally a brilliant communicator. One of the things people picked up from the documentary was that, wow, well, this guy is clearly got it.
You know,
you've got the gift of the gab, so to speak, as some people have said. You might not have any property experience when we yeah. first met, but you did have great people skills, good communication, might not have been in business before, in this capacity within property. Do you think that, and just be totally honest, even if you feel like it contradicts my message,
sure.
but do you feel that anybody can, not well, because some will choose not to, but do you think anybody can be a deal sourcer, be a property entrepreneur, or do you think that some people are just not cut out for it?
Unfortunately, I think the second.
Okay.
I think I've had a lot of self-analysis yeah. over this last 9 months, good and bad, a very honest look in the mirror of, yeah, you're good at this, but also you could be a bit, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I always knew prior to meeting you, prior to property even being a thing, that I was going to be successful at something.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what.
Yeah. I had the fire there.
I'd had success with YouTube and I'd had success with other jobs and stuff I'd had. But property was one of those things that I'll build my wealth in property, but I'll make the income from something else.
Yeah.
But property, long-term property investment is where I will become a rich man through that. My blueprint, you say about blueprint, my blueprint was not necessarily to the extent, and I know trainers and stuff use this as an extreme of rich people are greedy and money is the root of all evil and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That my blueprint wasn't there.
Yeah.
But I definitely had some very deeply ingrained relationships with money that I needed to you lit the fire. So you came and said, here's how you do this thing. Here's how you deal source. And what wasn't on the documentary is we spent a lot of time driving, a lot of time talking, and a lot of time you saying, you know, rather than say this kind of phrase, which is disabling, use this phrase, which is enabling. You know, you gave me a lot of training in that regard. And for quite a short period of time, I was battling myself between, well, here's this thing that works. Deal sourcing works. And a lot of people want to get to know your deals. And, you know, we've proven that Blackpool is a really good place to invest, but you're still sabotaging yourself. You're still dragging yourself down. You're still finding ways to crucify yourself for these reasons that, you know, that is your thermostat. And I think eventually after, you know, it's like the fight of good versus evil and God versus the devil, like, you get to a point where if you do something long enough, the thing that you focus on more becomes bigger and expands and becomes greater. And the thing that you didn't want, that you're not giving any focus and attention to, shrinks into nothingness.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like that's where my blueprint was. Like I still battle every day with things that I want to better about myself, things that I want to improve. But in terms of can anyone do this, like, I don't think so.
Unless you can
yeah. be so brutally honest. In fact, Dr. Joe Dispenza, he's incredible man, and he says that you can heal anything in your body. He says, but you've got to kill yourself first.
Yeah.
Because you're matter trying to change matter.
Yeah.
And when you can become energy trying to change matter, then you can change everything. I started meditating.
Okay.
I started meditating, going to Reiki, working a lot on my spiritual, you know, because of a lot of the stuff that was going on online and trying to heal myself at the same time, that process of being quiet for an hour and I'm gutted that I've only discovered it in my 30s has changed everything. Because that chatter, that thing that says you're not good enough, you can't do this, you're never going to make money, who do you think you are, all these people are saying this thing about you, maybe they're right. As soon as that chatter quietens down and you can just be at peace with yourself, you're like, actually, I'm offering a good service and I'm offering value to people, and they're getting great things from it. They're buying investments that they're going to pass through their generations, pass through their family for generations, and it's going to make cash flow. And it's almost a gift, you know, to them that they can have for generations.
Well, business is win-win. So if you give value, then money will follow.
Yeah,
you know. But it's really interesting what you're saying, dude. And
if you can change that inner monologue, if you can,
because all I can really do is teach people the strategies.
Yeah.
I try and give, you know, motivate people. I try, but ultimately, I can give people all of the tools, but yeah, they've got to be right in here.
Yeah.
You know.
With, I mean, I don't know major amounts about your background, but I mean, to get to where you got to at such a young age, credit to you, you've never really had to quote unquote struggle financially. Well, is that fair to say?
I don't think that's fair. No, I have struggled.
Well, I apologize.
I've struggled.
Compared to some people,
everything's relative, right?
Well, yeah, of course. I think when you've been running that program for such a long period of time, one thing that is massively valuable is being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And I wasn't. When you came to me, I was not honest with myself about, I boxed a lot of things out. I pushed a lot of things that I didn't want to admit about myself.
Do you think we could have done with having a month together?
Yeah, maybe. So. I think you'd like we. I think I'd have been a psychological mess by that point.
I think I would have been as well.
The reason that I say that is there's a point in the documentary where we were at my kitchen table actually, and I was saying to you, this is huge. This mental block.
I remember
the messages afterwards. A huge amount of messages were like, oh, brilliant, I really enjoyed it. You would not believe how much I resonated with that, with what you were saying about fear, that thing holding you back.
Yeah.
And the reason that I say, like, your situation of where you've been financially or whatever, I think when you're, like, trying to raise kids and you know, you go through a bit of a midlife crisis and you're like, I'm skint, what am I going to do? And I think a lot of people, if you look honestly at yourself, have that kind of mentality.
Yeah.
They see your training and go, but this is a way out. Like this is something that I can really do. To, you know, when it's inspiring seeing these people.
Yeah,
it's inspiring seeing these people have such amazing success. The first step towards getting that is to have a very distinct, almost like MOT of your mind.
Yeah,
of going, what do I really think about money? What do I really think about success? Am I really willing to put in the hours and hours and hours and hours to do this? Because if you don't, you'll quit.
Yeah,
and loads of people do that. Like,
I think you're right. And one of the things I loved about the week, and I said this to you at the time, was seeing it, like seeing the fear and seeing the some of the mental challenges and battles. I don't usually see that. We spoke about this, and it was in the doc. I mean, one of the things that shocked me, okay, is really when we did the eviction.
Yeah.
Okay, because you filmed the eviction and directed it and edited
it. Samuel Leeds.
Yeah. And you know, that was no. Sometimes people, some people said, oh, you know, you knew each other already, but we're very upfront about the fact that, you know, we knew each other before.
But I still had no property experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's the funny thing. I got diagnosed with this tumor in the December.
Yeah.
We started talking on just after Christmas.
Yeah.
By January, it was, let's do it. Like, let's create this TV show.
The eviction.
Can I just point out for everyone watching? I came up with the name Eviction, and you said, "Who wants to be a property millionaire?" That was your title. The way that I wrote that series was based entirely off watching your YouTube videos and going, "There's the same thing keeps coming up here." So, what about deal sourcing? What about refurbs? And that created the episodes.
Yes. Now, and that got you excited.
Yeah, there was one moment where there was Hannah, Anthony, Ricky, and John Raybould, who, by the way, John Raybould and Anthony have been angels to me recently. What a bunch of great guys. Those guys secured, I think it was £300,000 worth of property on a lease option agreement in Derby.
Yeah.
They started with nothing. So I'm in the car with them. We're driving, me and Alistair are driving them around. They've got nothing. And at that point, I realized that it was possible what they were doing. So I was like, rather than be behind the camera, like I need to start doing this property stuff myself. So I started looking at properties, never really found anything. And then you released that thing saying, I'm going to go to someone's house. And I'm like, that's got to be me. Like, whatever happens, because I was coming from a place of scarcity, obviously, because of my health. But at the same time, I realized I'd been in such close proximity to people who, all of them really, apart from maybe NC, and maybe Kirsty. Yeah, I think that's it. They were all younger than me.
Yeah.
You're younger than me. Yeah. So I'm like, I just haven't had the exposure to this world. And then suddenly these people are getting like, oh, we started with no money. In 2 days, we got £300,000.
So you saw it firsthand. And
yeah, man.
And I remember you I remember you calling me up and I was speaking and you saying, dude, I've just seen the video.
Yeah.
And I was like, come to the crash course, come to the crash course. And you did.
Yeah, you kept, well, you didn't ignore me, but I was like, dude, let it be me. And you were like, no, come to the crash course. You know, you kept denying it. Come to a crash course.
And you came and asked, it was a fabulous moment. But when we did the eviction, and by the way, I have like so much love for you as a person, you know, and I'm so glad that we went through the week that we did. Mm. But when we, here's the thing I want to say. When we did the eviction, there was Hannah and there was Anthony.
Yep.
And they were both wanted 20 grand.
Yep.
And I said, I didn't want to give it to Hannah because putting 20 grand into rent to serviced accommodations was too risky, whereas Anthony was putting it into a safe property.
Yeah.
Now, after the challenge that we did, mm-hmm. I said to you, I was prepared to give you a £20,000 loan to buy a property.
Yeah.
And you were like, and then you pitched the idea. I don't think we spoke about this. You were like, how about instead I'll put it into rent service accommodations? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's a bit risky. Like, why did you not want to put that into a house? And also, just with your money in generally.
Because.
Like, okay, let me ask you another question. Going back, when you'd finished the challenge and you had all this money from deal sourcing, you had access, I offered to give you 20 grand as a loan, obviously
with
interest.
Which you didn't.
Yeah, but I offered to give it because you said you wanted to put it into rent to rent, which I thought was risky.
Yeah.
Going back, with that money and the access to funds, would you do anything different? And if so, what would it be?
Are you saying if I was to take, if someone gave you 20 grand now?
Well, not even 20. Like you made 50 plus thousand pound in deal sourcing.
Yeah.
You had your 12 grand. You had like going back as an investor.
Yeah.
What would you do with that money?
I'm from Blackpool, so I'm still a bit of a skinflint. Like we're in London now.
Yeah.
Paying £4 for a pint pisses me off. Like, I still like to look after my money, even though I spend 10 of it on stupid auction houses. Given that money, I still want lease option agreements. The reason why I want lease option agreements is because the money to get into the lease option agreement and do it up and refurb it to whatever extent you're going to do, you're still going to make money back on that.
Yeah.
Because usually these, obviously the first deal, the HMO lease option to one side, usually they're either two flats or a house or like whatever it is, the more simple deals.
Yeah.
So that over a 7-year span, and I literally go for 7 years every single time because like five's a bit too short for the market to move. Yeah. I feel like 10's too much of a commitment. I might be wrong about that, but seven works.
Seven's great.
Yeah, seven works for me. So I would, in my mind, it's roughly 2 to 2.5 grand to get into a lease option, to get all your solicitors, to do all of that kind of stuff. It's about 2 to 2.5 grand. So if someone gave me 20 grand today, I would try and get 10 lease option agreements, because 10 lease option agreements at 200, 300, 400, 500 pound profit a month is going to be 200, 300, 400, 5,000 pound a month.
Yeah, fair enough.
Almost completely passively, assuming that you then pay 10-15% for a manager. Also, there's the potential that it's going to go up in capital gains.
That's true.
So in 7 years, let's say I bought lease option agreement on 10 houses that are 100 grand each. There's the potential that if those 100 grand turn into 130 or 140, you know, you sat on 30, 40, well, 300, 400,000
profit,
aren't you?
What are your favourite deals to source for your investors? So if someone comes to you and says, I've got 50 grand and I want to invest it, of course you're not going to go and find them a whole bunch of lease options.
Nope.
What kind of properties are the best properties?
Flats.
Single let's say flats. Okay, tell me why.
Because their price, the purchase price of them, is based very similar to a normal standard dwelling, but you're getting double the rent on it.
Okay.
So you've got two houses next to each other. One's a normal buy-to-let, one's two flats.
Yeah.
The buy-to-let is 100 grand.
Yeah.
The two flats are 120 grand.
Yeah.
The buy-to-let will get you 500, maybe 600 a month. The flats are doing 450 a month each.
Yeah.
So that's bringing you 900 for 120 outlay. And this one's bringing you 600 for 100 outlay. It's just better. It's a better economy of money.
Straightforward cash on cash.
And also, specifically with regards to sourcing, it's very attractive to an investor if you say to them, all the bills are covered, the council tax is covered,
Yeah.
You know, utilities are covered.
Yeah.
True. If they want broadband, it's covered. You put the money in. There's no other cost apart from obviously insurance, building insurance and stuff like that. Yeah. But there's hardly any outlay.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it's good. And it's good return.
I'll put a link as well for if people want to contact you about that. I'll put a link absolutely. In the description. Last question.
I just want to clarify my first ever business. Right. This is how green I was. So straight after you went home, I was like, going to get into this sourcing.
Yeah.
And I called my company Awesome Source.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually realise that Awesome Source in America is slang for male ejaculate.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had to change that,
scrap that.
Really, really quickly. Okay. I changed that.
What are you like? Okay, last question.
Brilliant.
So if we were to sit on this sofa again and meet up in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure we will do. We may do. I'm sure you can come back on the channel. But if we were to meet back in 3 years' time, what do you expect or what are your aspirations? What do you expect life to look like property-wise and just generally in 3 years' time?
Fantastic question. I have the freedom to go wherever I want, do whatever I want with my family, and my friends, and basically money forever has always been an object.
Yeah.
It's always been a problem. It's never been looked at positively. Now, because of my change in mentality and who I think I am as a person, I'm not a religious man, but I don't feel like there's any limit to me.
Mm.
Not only financially, not only business. I just don't feel like I have any, you know, the sunroof's opened on me now.
Yeah.
So with regards to that question, there is no limit. Like I have no doubt, maybe not in 3 years, but certainly within 5 years, my portfolio will be way in excess of £1 million. Way in excess. Because I now am taking that money from, you got to understand, coming from a standing start, I can't just go out and go, I'll have that £100,000 house and I'll have that £150,000 house and I want that one and I want, like, because you don't have the money to do it. So I've spent the last 9 months building that pot up, building that money up and just rinsing and repeating it through the lease options that I've got going on, through the properties that I'm purchasing at the moment, and I'm making more money, which means I'm investing more money, which means it's compound interest.
Yeah.
So I'm at a point, I mean, I'm obviously nowhere near your level, but I'm at a stage where I feel great because I've got some security now.
Yeah.
I feel great because I'm helping people every day through my deal sourcing course and all that kind of stuff. I feel good because I'm contributing. I feel good that I sleep well at night knowing that I'm helping people. I don't feel stressed.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if forget 3 years, let's talk 6 months. If in 6 months I can, like this tumor is gone because I'm not stressed.
Yeah.
That's my goal. Like it's to be, you know, use my body and my mind to be the best servant that I can while I'm here on this planet, and not, you know, not just hoard it all to myself, start giving it out and teaching other people to do the same, and just liberate, I suppose, a similar journey to yours, really, just making the world a better place than when you came here, you know.
Yeah, I love that, buddy. I love your heart and your desire to inspire people, which is what we did do. We did do the documentary. Also as well, final words, I want to say thank you for letting me come and live with you for a week.
Yeah.
And for me, it was, you were a bit like a guinea pig in a way. It's a social experiment for me. So seeing how it's panned out, it's just real. I think it's, you know, it's a really amazing story.
Mm.
We'll go down in history.
It's changed my life. It's such a throwaway phrase, but it genuinely, like my life is not the same as it was 9 months ago.
Yeah,
I'm a different person, inside, outside, financially, spiritually, energetically, and that's because you took the time to come and do that. You know, it's funny. I get people messaging me now saying, "Would you be willing to do what Samuel did for you?"
Do it.
But originally, I was going, Alex. Obviously, when I was
I challenge you to do it, and then let's have a rippling effect across the world.
See if absolutely
respect, man. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.